a very British message to Garcia. Previously, my colleague Fred Brownbill wrote of U.S. Navy SEAL Marine Commander Brian Bourgeois, commanding officer of SEAL Team 8, who was killed in the first week of December 2021 while fast roping from a helicopter during a training exercise in Norfolk, Virginia. A friend of Mr. Brownbill, who served under Marine Commander Bourgeois in Iraq, paid the following tribute. "He was a hell of a good guy. He was one of my LTs in Iraq. No job too hard. He exemplified message to Garcia. It was a privilege to have known and worked with him. He represented the best of all uniformed service members and was highly regarded as one of our best SEALs. After expressing our condolences to the commander's wife and five children, and nodding in respectful agreement towards Mr. Brownbill's fitting tribute, we might ask, what is this message to Garcia?" In 1899, Elbert Hubbard wrote the essay Message to Garcia as a worthy tale of derring do executed with the individual initiative and meticulous attention to detail required to deliver battle orders to an ally of the Americans, General Calixto Garcia. As the events described took place during the Spanish-American War in mountainous inland Cuba, it is perhaps difficult for an audience this side of the Atlantic to grasp. Is there a story closer to home that might provide the same inspiration? No doubt there will be many. May I humbly present that of Lieutenant David James, MBE, DSC, RNVR. David Pelham James was born on Christmas Day 1919, an old Etonian and the son of RAF pioneer Sir Archibald William Henry James, MC. He joined the Royal Navy Volunteer Reserve at the outbreak of World War II, having left Oxford's Balliol College during his second year in order to enlist. By June 1940, he was a midshipman on HMS Drake. The end of the following year found him on motor gunboat duty, being the second in command of MGB No. 63. On the 28th of February 1943, during an operation in the Low Country littorals that saw him earn a DSC, he was sunk on MGB 79. Rescued by a German trawler, the survivors were taken ashore to the Hook of Holland, made prisoners of war, and sent to the Marlag prisoner of war camp near Bremen. Marlag is an abbreviation of Marienlager, meaning naval camp, this one being at Western Timinke on a branch line halfway between Bremen and Hamburg. During the war, other notable inmates were to include Captain Mickey Byrne of No. 2 Commando, captured during the Saint Nazaire raid, Lieutenants Donald Cameron, RNR, and Godfrey Place, RN, taken prisoner during the X-craft attack on the Tirpitz, and official war artist Lieutenant John Worsley, RN. In the camp, James converted to Catholicism and planned his escape. With the wash block being helpfully outside the perimeter and the guards being lax, it was possible for members of the Bath Party to escape out of a shower room window, which James did on December the 8th, 1943. Disguised and with accompanying forged documents, his ruse was as a shell-shocked Danish electrician making his way to Bremen for a medical appointment. This disguise served him well. Arriving at the city by local train where, in the crush of the toilets, he abandoned that disguise and adopted a second one hidden beneath his Danish electrician's great coat. Wary that POWs and their guards often travelled on the branch line to Bremen, meaning his disguise proper might be recognised, he took the precaution of waiting until a change of trains before assuming his preferred alter ego. As the toilet cubicle door opened, James emerged in his own Royal Navy uniform, customised with a single flash to appear to be a Bulgarian naval attaché. Accompanying forged documents ordered German forces to offer him every cooperation as he travelled the Reich, inspecting ports for technical reasons, all signed off by an invented official at the German Foreign Office. The attaché's name? Begeroff, pronounced, and easy to remember, Bugeroff. The documents had been forged in the camp, the uniform altered by a Civvy Street master tailor called John Wells. The Bulgarian Navy had been chosen as they only had three ships, and no one from the Wehrmacht was likely to have seen their officers. From Bremen, this time on the main line, he travelled back on himself, continuing all the way to Hamburg, and from there to Stettin, but struggled to find the port area, let alone any neutral shipping capable and willing to take him across the Baltic to neutral Sweden. Moving on to Lübeck, his fortune improved, briefly. Timing an uninterrupted stride to coincide with the turned back of a dock sentry's predictable beat, he was able to climb the gangplank of a Swedish coaster, refused passage, as the vessel would be coaling the next day and crawling with German stevedores, and missing a departing adjacent vessel by seconds, James was forced to leave the dock area, but in doing so was stopped by the sentry. Lacking a specific pass for that port, he was taken to the River Police building, the Wasserschutzpolizei. There, as proof you should never underestimate your enemy, a ruddy-faced, overweight bureaucrat spotted a mistake on the would-be Bulgarian attaché's fake documents. The chief of police for Cologne, whose name the POWs had spotted in a German newspaper, and whose forged hand had added identity checked by telephone from Berlin to Bulgarov's papers, should have signed himself Polizeipräsident, not Polizeikommissar. During the previous few days' wheeze, German officials bought James's rail tickets, hung his RN cap on waiting room hat stands next to Nazi headgear, and bought him beer. He ate for free in German workers' canteens, chatted to home on leave officers from the Afrika Korps, and shared a compartment with the Hitler Youth, all in his Royal Navy uniform. While wandering Stettin, a German civilian stopped him, told him he wasn't safe because of the air raids, and paid for his ticket to Lübeck. Sent back to Marlag and following his punishment, James redoubled the effort to escape. In between times, the ruse of nipping out of the shower window and not being reported missing for a whole week until the next roll call had been kiboshed by Jerry, who began counting them all in and counting them all out on every wash trip. A cunning plan was hatched, one that was immortalised in a 1953 Albert R. N. film starring Jack Hawkins. Albert was a dismantleable colleague, crafted with the help of war artist Worsley, that could be smuggled into the showers in bits, assembled and, from an Obergruppen and Taliban's distance, appear to make up the numbers in a headcount. In late 1944, James escaped again, this time disguised as a Swedish merchant seaman. The plan went well until, while sticking to his cover in a bar, a German addressed him in Swedish, explaining he'd lived in Sweden for many years before the war. Fortunately, James could speak the language fluently. Aged 17, he'd sailed around the world on a four-masted Ericsson windjammer called the Viking. Following a successful escape, James presented himself to a British military attaché in Stockholm. A communication dated the 8th of March 1944 from our embassy to the Admiralty summarised his escapade and concluded, "He is a resourceful young man, however, and well worth the £200 he looks like costing us for his package." Back in England, and with the war still raging, given James's experience and knowledge of escape, forgery, disguise, the ports of the Baltic, and his fluency in German and Swedish, the senior service sent him to Antarctica. As part of Operation Tabarin, meant to shore up Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands and parts of the Antarctic continent, he wintered in Graham Land and proceeded to Hope Bay at 63 degrees 23 minutes south, working as a surveyor. A 1,390-foot conical mountain called James Nunatak is named after him, and Nunatak being an outcrop of rock from an ice field or glacier. At the end of the war, his adventure continued as he became an advisor to the 1948 film Scott of the Antarctic and starred as a body double in some long-distance shots. He wrote a book about the experience entitled Scott of the Antarctic, the film and its production. The following year, he published That Frozen Land, the story of a year in the Antarctic. Having had a good war, he returned to England and began a life more ordinary. Marrying in May 1950, his bride was Jacquetta Mary Theresa Digby, 9 years his junior, and daughter of Edward Kenelm Digby, 11th Baron Digby. Simultaneously, he became one of the Churchills, his wife's sister being Pamela Churchill Harriman, first wife of Randolph Churchill, a subsequent spouse of W. Averill Harriman, and eventually Bill Clinton's US ambassador to France. During the following 8.5 years of their marriage, Jacquetta presented the now author and publishing executive with 6 children, 4 boys, 2 girls. His written works also included Wavy Navy, Some Who Served, co-authored with James Lennox Kerr, a fellow naval reservist, mentioned in dispatches at Omaha Beach. Wavy references the wavy gold braid on Nails, though reservists' cuffs, which distinguishes them from regular Royal Navy officers and no doubt helps to baffle the likes of the Afrika Korps and Hitler Youth. Outward Bound, open to the foreword by the Duke of Edinburgh, in praise of fox hunting, was a series for the Field. Added to these was his own wartime biography entitled Prisoner's Progress. James was the official biographer of Field Marshal Frederick Slay Roberts, 1st Earl Roberts, VC, KG, KP, GCB, OM, GCSI, GCIE, VD, PC, FRSGS, known as Roberts of Kandahar, whose life, never mind yours and mine, made Lieutenant James's seem rather dull. Born in Kanpore, India, the Field Marshal died touring trenches during the First World War, aged 82. In 1959, James became Conservative Member of Parliament for Brighton Kempton. Partway through his parliamentary term, he was stalked and ambushed on a February morning at Victoria Station's ticket barrier after arriving in town on the 8:54 from Haywards Heath. The assailant, TV presenter Eamon Andrews, armed with the big red This Is Your Life book. During the programme, James was reacquainted with Captain Uno Morn of the Viking, able seaman John Baker of Stricken MGB 79, Paul Shadrick of the Lubeck Police, who recaptured him, and Taylor John Wells, who, in the interim, had become Lord Mayor of Westminster. Also in that series of This Is Your Life, Max Bygraves, fitter in the RAF, Charlie Drake, RAF, Coco the Clown, conscripted to both the Red and White Armies during the Russian Revolution, Dora Bryan, Ensa, and Aka Bilk, National Serviceman, Suez Canal Zone. Different times. Interested in the existence of the Loch Ness Monster, in 1962, David James MP co-founded the Loch Ness Phenomena Investigation Bureau with Sir Peter Scott, naturalist and son of Sir Robert Falcon Scott of the Antarctic. In the 1964 general election, Brighton Kemptown was lost to Labour after a record 7 recounts, there being only 7 votes between the parties. During the same year, the large family were pictured in the Field, oddly boxed within an article about shooting migrating gazelle in the 17-mile gap between Fort Lely and Moranyangung. A kilted Mr. James stood with his wife before his ivy-clad Wervelsfield Green Sussex home, behind an unnamed ratcatcher standing and a golden Labrador recumbent. Alongside were his 6 children, Patsy, aged 11, Kenny, 1.5, Christopher, 6, Michael, 8, Diana, astride a pony called Delphi, 10, and Peter, 12. At the time, their proud father was a trustee of the National Maritime Museum, a council member of the Fauna Preservation Society, Outward Bound Trust, and British Field Sports Society. In 1970, he returned to Parliament, this time elected as MP for North Dorset, which he represented until standing down at the 1979 election. Also in 1979, he changed his name to Guthrie James to mark the connection between Clan Guthrie and his family home of Torresay Castle on the Isle of Mull. After a brief retirement, he died on the 15th of December 1986. His widow, the Honourable Mrs. James, passed in 2019, aged 91. Eamon Andrews shall have the last word. David James, this book salutes a vivid figure of the present era whose zestful spirit recalls the gay adventures of the past and sets a bright example to those whose future lies in the new Elizabethan age. David Pelham Guthrie James, MBE, DSC, 1919 to 1986.